It took a federal jury in New York City only 13 hours of deliberations over 2 days to return guilty verdicts in the latest state government corruption trial in New York. Former SUNY Polytechnic leader Dr. Elaine Calieros, once the major driving force behind the Cuomo administration's upstate economic development programs, was found guilty of a bid-rigging scheme that steered state contracts to favored companies in Buffalo and Syracuse. Several co-defendants were also convicted. Rob Gavin, who covered the trial for the Albany Times Union, says while Governor Cuomo has not been accused of any wrongdoing, his name did come up during the trial, along with his former top aide, Joseph Prococo, who was convicted of corruption in an earlier trial.
They're not completely separate cases because they are initially the same time. Judge Valerie Caproni sort of split them up. You have the same defendants in Steve Aiello and Girardi with CORE. Initially had Prococo in the first case, as well as a guy named Peter Galbraith Kelly. Where in this case, it's Aiello, Girardi again. You also had Simonelli and you had Calieros. They were all charged in September 2016. To answer your question about the mention of the governor and Prococo, both names came up. Prococo's name came up. It's kind of interesting in that they needed to establish, the government that is, needed to establish a venue. And that means that they needed to establish that to prove wire fraud, a telephone call or an email went through the Southern District of New York, the federal court system of the Southern District of New York, which includes Manhattan. So to do that, you have to prove that either one of the defendants did or caused someone else to send an email in furtherance of this conspiracy. And one of the emails that they used to prove that was emails between Joe Prococo and Howe. Now, the governor's office was mentioned a lot. There was talk of most interesting was the testimony from David Doyle, who's a former spokesman for the governor and for SUNY Poly. And he testified that Howard Glaser, who's the governor's former, depending on who you talk to, former number two or three top aide, director of state operations at that point, according to Doyle, Howard Glaser instructed Howe that if he wanted to work for Calieros, and he apparently didn't want him to work for him at first, he needed to, quote-unquote, put his thumb on him, make sure he was there. And the testimony was that Calieros was only allowed to keep his job on the grounds that he allowed Todd Howe to be the, quote-unquote, eyes and ears of the governor's administration at SUNY Poly. And it's worth noting that at the time this alleged arrangement happened, Todd Howe was already a convicted felon, having defrauded a bank the year before of $45,000. And he was still managing to work and really do a lot of business working at a subsidiary for Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna in Washington, D.C., which is obviously a subsidiary of the Albany, Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna.
Has there been any talk of an appeal? An appeal will likely be forthcoming, but did the defense lay out its strategy for an appeal yet?
I don't think there's any question they are going to challenge the verdict. You have, according to the defense, a lot of appeal issues. I think we would be naive to think, in light of cases such as the Bruno case, Silver case, and the Skelos case, which, by the way, was right across the hall from this case, still going on. All those are examples of trials involving public corruption, in which case there was a guilty verdict, and they later came back. In this case, I think you can expect to hear a lot of talk about a challenge to a wire fraud, which is known as, and I know this is a little arcane, but what's known as the right to control theory of wire fraud. And what that means is that Fort Schuyler Management Corporation, which was the nonprofit arm of SUNY Poly that approved the contracts, what the prosecution said in this case was that the defendants defrauded Fort Seiler of its right to control its own assets by not giving them all the information and basically conspiring to rig the bids. Now, depending on who you talk to, that theory of wire fraud could be subject to some heavy scrutiny at appellate levels. Already, there apparently are some cases out there. But I also think that you're going to see a challenge to the judge's decision not to dismiss wire fraud charges against Simonelli and Calleros because of, as I mentioned earlier, that issue of standing. At the end of the proof, when the prosecution rested its case, Paul Sheckman, the attorney for Simonelli, said that they had not proven venue, they had not proven that a wire went through the Southern District. And as a result of his argument, the judge basically agreed, said that a mistake had been made that should not have been made, and that she was prepared to toss those charges, but then decided to allow the government to reopen its proof. And they called the custodian from Verizon, who then testified about more phone records, including those ones I mentioned about Joe Protoko. I think we would certainly expect to see that decision get challenged. It's not inconceivable that the defense will try to get the judge to toss those charges herself, which, frankly, I don't know how much of a difference the sentence might be if it was just a wire fraud conspiracy conviction as opposed to the wire fraud conspiracy and wire fraud conviction. One thing you do need to keep in mind is you'll see on a press release from the federal government that the max sentences are 20 years. Generally speaking, those are not the type of sentences you see in these cases. There are federal sentencing guidelines, probably a lot less time, but I think you're certainly looking at prison time here.
Rob Gavin of the Albany Times Union covered the Elaine Calleros trial and spoke to WAMC Friday morning from New York City.